Hello, I'm Rob Beckett.
And I'm Josh Widdicombe.
Welcome to Parents in Hell, the show in which Josh and I discuss what it's really like to be a parent, which I would say can be a little tricky.
So, to make ourselves, and hopefully you, feel better about the trials and tribulations of modern-day parenting, each week we'll be chatting to a famous parent about how they're coping.
Or hopefully how they're not coping.
And we'll also be hearing from you, the listener, with your tips, advice and, of course, tales of parenting woe.
Because let's be honest, there are plenty of times when none of us know what we're doing.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It takes a lot of hard work to make it look easy. This Mother's Day, Duluth Trading Co. can help you give her something that keeps up. Whether you prefer to shop online or in-store, Duluth has a motherload of gear, goods, and gifts to keep her comfortable and capable, no matter what needs doing. With Duluth's problem-solving details and legendary durability to boot, you'll finally be mom's favorite again. Check out DuluthTrading.com for all your Mother's Day gifting needs.
Hello, you're listening to Parent in Hell with...
Hiya, can you say Josh Widdicombe?
Josh Widdicombe.
Can you say Rob Beckett?
Rob Beckett.
Very good.
Oh, solid. That was great.
Really, yeah, really good. Knocked out of the park. Love the podcast. Here's my two-year-old Maya saying your names. I'm from...
Harrow.
Oh, my God.
No.
Harrogate.
Oh!
When you started saying that, I just thought, I can't believe this is happening.
Oh, God, I nearly got hard then.
Yeah, that was incredible. She was born in York. Mum's from East Yorkshire, but not from Hull. Me and my Bezzy also...
They haven't got a Yorkshire accent, have they?
No.
Some would argue York's not really Yorkshire.
Yeah. Me and my Bezzy, also an obsessive listener, saw you in York back before COVID nonsense.
Do you know what? I sell really well in York.
I love
York.
I'm
always gigging up there. I think it's because when I first started, I did all the little places in Yorkshire. And I think if you smash it or do a good gig there, they'll put the effort in to come and see you elsewhere.
Yorkshire's a good place to gig. We also do a podcast about beer, but children has to put pay to that for now. He made me do this as he thinks my daughter is hilarious. Great work on the podcast. Keep it real and sexy, Dan Granger. There we go.
Cheers, Grange.
Cheers, Granger. Granger.
Big dog. Big DG.
Now, Rob, have we got
Danny
anything the
Grange.
Quickly before our guest, which is, we both agreed, one of our favourite episodes, isn't it?
Oh, it's a great episode, this one. We're funny and also really interested and talks about some serious things, but in a fun way. But before that, I've got a couple of things. One, I was working Sunday. I do Radio 2, 5 till 7. It would be great if you could listen, guys, and maybe message in. Because I'd say I'm still winning over the fan base.
That's always the case with radio, Rob. That's Radio always 2. The case with the radio. Give Ellis a ring and talk to him and him about him and John Robbins' first appearance on Radio 5 Live.
Yeah, when you work for the BBC, there's always a little bit of a settling in period. So it'd be quite nice to if you'd listen, guys, or listen on BBC Sounds.
Yeah,
you can hear the show.
So they anyway, can talk the numbers.
Yeah,
do you know,
exactly.
Do you know how radio
please.
Ratings are done? People just tick a book at home. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
Well, if you've got the book, tick it. If not, even if you don't listen, can everyone just listen to, just have it on the background, my show, Sundays 5 till 7, and that would really help me out. Thanks, guys. Anyway, I was at work doing that. I was doing my radio show, and I left the house about 2 o'clock. Lou left at 1 o'clock. She took both girls around the corner to the neighbours, who are also parents at the school, to have a little barbecue. They were having a little bank holiday barbecue. All the kids from school was there. They got a big bouncy castle, and they were just playing in the garden. And I thought, you know, we got a busy Monday, so I thought Lou might be back, you know, after a few hours or so. Anyway, I'm on my way home from the radio show at 7 p.m. Lou's still not home. Lou gets in at 8 p.m. She's been there for 7 hours, comes back drunk.
Love it. Love
it. Got drunk. Not battered. She knows what she's doing. She's in full control of the kids. Yeah. She walked back. It was not a drive around the corner. And but very merry. Yeah. Very drunk. And found out she was playing Gin Face with the mums and dads from school.
Gin Face? What's Gin Face?
Well, Gin Face is where you get 10 shots of gin. No, sorry, five shots of gin, five shots of water. You all stand in a circle. You take turns because it's obviously clear. Yeah. And you drink one and people have to guess what you're drinking.
Oh, that's fun, isn't it?
So that you can either fun. Have a straight face or, that's disgusting, bluff them, double bluff them, and they've got to work out if it's gin or water.
That is good.
Anyway, she came home drunk. And then she was in pure, what did I do? Did I say anything embarrassing for the people at school?
Love it.
It was great.
But she
did tell me the same story three times. You know when someone's drunk, I went, oh, yeah, and then so-and-so. I'm like, you've told me already. Stop telling me. But it was quite funny to see her come back a bit merry. But yeah, that was quite funny. And also, before we introduce our guest, I've got some really good correspondence
Josh. Hit me up.
So, things you've won as a kid. We like this one, don't we?
Yeah, love it.
Things you've won as a kid. Hi, Rob, Josh and Michael. As a kid, around six, we went on a family holiday to Butlins. My parents were off to see Cool and the Gang in the evening, so they took us to the kids' show beforehand. The kids' show was, in fact, Blind Date for Kids.
This being the 90s,
everyone was then obsessed with the show, so I volunteered to be the person that reads out the NAF questions. My logic in taking the question role is that I knew I'll get a date. Yeah, guaranteed.
Yeah.
Bang on date. Part. Not bad for a six-year-old, is it? Good thinking. Yeah. I remember sitting one side of a curtain asking something lame like, what's their favourite meal? At the end, I picked someone and we went on a date. We sat on our own in the bar area and the prize was in fact a carton of Ribena and some crisps. The boy didn't say a word to me the whole time and could barely look at me in the eye.
Oh my God.
As an introduction to the world of modern dating, I suppose it was pretty accurate. Although on reflection, it's quite odd for a kid's show, isn't it?
Yeah, I think it's weird. That's not okay. I don't think they did do kids specials on that, did they? Like, you know, they'd occasionally do like kids specials of TV shows.
I don't think they aired it, if they did.
No, I think that...
I'm not sure what's going on behind the scenes.
Problematic, that.
But yeah, that's poor Tessa from East London that went on a date at six.
That is weird.
At Butlins.
That is weird.
This is a good one here. When I was younger, I entered a phone competition for the game show To Me, To You, the Chuckle Brothers.
Yeah.
And the question was, which band had five members? Five Bewitched or some other band, I can't remember.
Yeah.
I felt very confident it was five. I entered, my mum told us, we've got to go out for shopping, and we went out. On returning, there was an answer phone message, which my mum played. The theme tune of Chuckle Vision played out, and then cut to someone saying, I had won the competition.
No way.
But as I didn't pick up, the prize went to the runner-up, so I didn't win.
Oh, no.
My mum was mad as she never okayed the phone call.
What?
And said it served me right for not asking a bill payer's permission.
Oh,
and I was grounded.
No!
I refused to ever watch anything with those two brothers in again.
It's not their
fault. Why would they leave a message?
I don't remember To Me, To You being a lie. Like,
yeah, but you can't leave a message and go, oh, unlucky, you didn't win. Just hang up.
Yeah. So...
Jane from Southend, still not over that, 25 years
old. Oh, my word. That is heartbreaking. But exactly my kind of anecdote.
This is one boomer one I want to finish on, which is great. And then we'll do Nihao. Boomer and grandparenting story. Hiya, love the poddy. My granddad lives in the Highlands of Scotland, and my brother and I used to spend a couple of weeks holiday there a year. He would sometimes take us to the one screen cinema that would show one film on repeat for a week. To avoid the crowds, he would take us to see the end of the film and then wait until it started and watch up until...
So he'd watch like the last 10 minutes first?
And then watch up until they caught up for when they went in so they could leave and arrive without crowds and easy parking.
That is absolutely incredible.
That's Francis Rose.
Can't get enough of
that. That is mental.
That is really
good. That is insane. Right, now it's time for Nihao Arthanaika. The really good interview, this.
Loved it.
Nihao, he was a Five Live presenter. He has written books. He was based in London for years on Radio 1, then moved his whole family up to Manchester to be on Five Live, which he talks about, and the challenges of that. Also, really funny interview, but also really interesting on if you are, you know, moving house or you are have got kids in new schools that aren't enjoying it. It's quite an interesting listen, but it's really funny as well. But it's a great one. You enjoyed this, didn't you, Josh?
Loved it. Absolutely loved it. Yeah, I was delighted. It was one of those ones where we did far too much because we just kept talking. But don't worry, Michael will have had out the chaff. But what I mean is, like, the time just flew by.
Minimal chaff, I'd say.
Because I'll be honest, I'm not going to name names, But there has been ones where I've been looking at that clock ticking, thinking, when are we going to hit 45 here?
Oh, but also thinking it's an absolute chaff monster. We might have to go to 50 minutes here just to replace chaff with chat.
I tell you what, there's going to be a few emails read out before this one. A fair few emails.
And that was Insert Name Here with this 7-minute interview about their children, which I think they don't have a relationship with. See you next week.
This is the opposite. This is Nihal Athanaika.
Enjoy it. Nihal, welcome to the show. How are you?
Oh, I'm really happy to be on this. I'm not going to lie. This is amazing. It's amazing.
We're very happy to have you here.
Yeah. I think we're coming on your show as well.
Yes, of course you are. Of course you are. Yeah. Although, wait a minute. Whoa. For BBC reasons, this has not happened because you're coming on my show.
No, of course not. Of course not.
Because you've both independently been on my show before anyway.
Yeah.
So. Yes. I was talking about my last book, and I think we're going to come on to talk about the new book. It's an absolute book. And you've got a book out. It's a book frenzy. You've also got children. Can you give us a rundown of your child situation?
The child situation is I have a 13-year-old girl and a 14-year-old boy. Kingsley is my son, who is 14. He'll be 15 in November. And Aria is my daughter. Yeah. And they loathe each other at the moment.
So really?
Proper, it is carnage. Like, it is absolute carnage. It's like, one of them is mainland China and the other one's Taiwan, and they're just, it's always tense. The tension is always there.
So how long's this been? Is this a new development?
No, it's just they're very close in age. There's only 19 months between them. Oh. And there's just this, this friction. You're always trying to, it's exhausting refereeing it.
Yeah.
You're constantly kind of trying to go, look, just be kind to each other. No, don't do that. No, don't say that. Don't trigger that. Don't escalate that. It's a constant kind of this. And
Working for Donald Trump.
Yeah, it's kind of you're always trying to go, no, please don't say that. Don't do that. Don't trigger that. Don't escalate that. Don't react to that.
What are the main beefs then between them? What's the main issue?
It's just the sibling. My brother and I had a little bit of it when we were growing up. It's just the kind of, they're very different personalities. They definitely love each other. Right? Like, I know there's a lot of love there, but they just can't coexist at the moment, particularly well.
Like Gerrard and Lampard, they're good. They just didn't link up.
There you go. Absolutely. That's it.
So what you're saying is you need to swap one of your children for Gareth Barry.
Okay. Well, we can take it beyond football. It's like Alonso and Hamilton, I think, as well. There's carnage. There's definitely beef there. It's Biggie and Tupac, except no drive-bys, which is good because neither of them have driving licenses.
Are you Shug Knight in this situation?
I kind of am Shug Knight. Yeah, you're right.
So how did you feel when you found out that your partner was pregnant with the second? Because that turnaround, you would have had a 9-month-old.
Yeah. Well, for me, it was kind of okay, right? Because I don't have to do much, right? Like, first 6 months of being a parent, I was a terrible dad, right? Like, I was a Radio 1 DJ, I was off DJing, I was like, and my wife turned to me. I kind of became my dad's generation, which was that I go out and work, right? I'll enjoy the nice stuff by cuddling a baby and putting photos on social media and not really be kind of present, as they say. I mean, my wife, I remember 6 months in, turned around and said, right, okay, well, if I'm going to have to do this on my own, I might as well do it properly on my own, and you can do one. And I was like, she literally gave me that kind of ultimatum, because I just effortlessly slipped into this kind of really archaic role of being a, which really kind of freaked me out, because that's not the guy I thought I was.
No, I wouldn't have expected that from you.
No, and that's not who I thought I was going to be. And then just, I guess, I don't know, the cultural nature of how I grew up just became that. And then suddenly I was like, well, okay, that's not cool. That's not who I need to be. That's not who I should be. And I don't know if my wife would agree that I flipped it around in my own head.
You did enough to save the marriage.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Well, yeah, yeah. 17 years later, our 17th
save
anniversary.
Save it slash keep
week.
It going. It's a very fine line, isn't it?
That's kind of what, yeah, exactly.
Just results speak for themselves.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Numbers don't lie.
Was your parents, so with your parents, were they a bit quite sort of old school with the mum did all the baby stuff and then the dad just worked?
Was yeah, that... I don't think my dad was present when we were born. Yeah,
really?
I don't think he was there. When I think part of the reason was that my mum said that he fainted at the sight of blood, so she thought it would be best that he just didn't. So the nurses kind of attended to her, not to him. So it was a better. But also, again, it was a generation that didn't. Don't think you know, change nappies or got that involved really. You know, my dad worked away a lot as well, so. I don't think, yeah, I think there's very clear roles. I mean, my mum did work. She was a nurse in the NHS. She worked part time, but it was very much a given that my dad was the breadwinner. My dad paid the mortgage. My dad paid for everything. And my mum money that she had was stuff that she could just use as she wanted. But the primary breadwinner was my dad. And that's how we were brought up. And also as well, you know, it's my brother and I, so there's three guys in the house. So you're in that kind of environment as well, you know. So, yeah, it was weird.
Do you think one of the differences, not just generationally, but also your job was DJing on Radio 1, so it doesn't even feel to the person who's stuck at home like you're going out to work. It feels like you're going out to play records and have a laugh.
Yeah, I'm sorry, but WOMAD in Singapore... That flight alone is a grind, quite frankly. Right? Okay. Going off to do Glastonbury. These things are hard work, Josh and Rob.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure I appreciate the tone, Josh, if I'm honest.
But also as well, when you have to present that show, you can't go, oh, this has been a bit boring actually at Glastonbury, because it's on Radio 1. You'll be like, it was the best one ever. These guys are amazing. Yeah, no, yeah, I'm having the time of my life. And your wife's at home.
Yeah. Yeah, well, that's the thing, isn't it? You're doing a DJ gig in Thailand, and you're kind of thinking, "Wow, this is amazing." But there's two ways of selling it, isn't there? There's the way you speak to your wife about it, which is like, "Oh, so boring. The crowd went into it. It was rubbish." And then, of course, you come back and you get on Radio 1, knowing that your wife's not listening, and going, "Big weekend in Bangkok. Get a supper club. Big tunes were being played. Big sound, you know, 2 hours set, absolutely the most banging sound of my life. It was amazing, a queue around the block, and then when we dropped this track, the whole place kicked off. It was a mad one." And then come home and go, God, worst gig ever. Like, terrible.
Also, as well, Radio 1, you can't really be like, "Oh, I'm a bit tired, I was up with the baby last night," because it's so youth-centric, that station. As soon as there's a whiff of you've got a kid, you're en route to Radio 2 or 5 Live. You're not there long enough. That's why Scott Mills, he's got no kids. That's why he lasted so long. He's at 57. Good on him. What an innings he had at Radio 1.
Yeah, there was that, though. The thing was, always when I was at Radio 1, the audience was skewed much older. That remember the Chris Moyles years, it was all young parents. Like the idea that under Chris Moyles, it was loads of teenagers going, this is the greatest thing in the world. It wasn't. It was loads of blokes in their 30s, pretty much, wasn't it? Like being super geezery. And so when I was doing my specialist show on Radio 1, of course, that was just 2 hours of me mixing live and playing tracks back to back largely. But when I was doing Weekend Breakfast and then Weekend Afternoon, which are daytime shows, then you are trying to kind of, you can say that you've got babies. So I had babies around the right time because a lot of the listeners were also doing that. They were also having kids. I had kids late. So I became a dad in my mid 30s. Whereas so all the people who are having kids in their mid 20s, You were identifying with them, and B, that was a kind of core Radio 1 audience.
Now, are you nearly 50?
I'm 51.
Unbelievable. No way.
Incredible.
This is outrageous. What's the secret? Not looking after your kids? Is that the answer?
It's eating copious amounts of mango chutney.
Mango chutney,
which Rob in his book said is a jam. And
yeah, I've
Josh,
got a bit of a...
It's not a jam. It is a chutney.
No, I've got a bit of a thing with chutney. It's just a posh word for jam that means you can have it with your dinner. It isn't. It is just jam, but like you couldn't have. Oh, well, you can have with your roast dinner, a bit of strawberry jam, but like you can have a bit of mango chutney on a curry, and that's fine. But no, let's not get bogged down by this. We're getting on well here now. We had this argument on your show last time.
We did.
Well, let me ask you. Do you know what? I just want one more Radio 1 question because I was thinking about this the other day with Scott Mills. I always think it's a really difficult transition. If when you're on Radio 1, the transition away from Radio 1 is a really tough kind of thing to negotiate well. Are you all, when you're on Radio 1, are you thinking, I need an exit plan here? Because I'm getting older. And is everyone on Radio 1 thinking, what am I going to do in 5 years here?
Is it always like gangsters that have earned a bit of money and need a way out? How can you go straight? How can you start earning it clean?
That's exactly what happened. That's literally what happened. In 2012, I took on a new agent and I said, the only thing you have to do is plan an exit strategy from Radio 1.
Because get that's me out exactly Radio 1 alive.
That's exactly what it is. That
get
is
me out
exactly
breathing.
What it is. I would say, I'd amassed all the cash I'd earned. I said, right, clean this up for me. It was essentially laundering my profession like that through various fronts like that. So yeah, that's exactly what I said to him because I saw that and I felt sorry for Radio 1 DJs, especially those who are in specialist music because they never really see it coming. And I remember the day I was told it was over, it was with two other DJs and they were genuinely shocked. Whereas I was just like, brilliant. I mean, I've seen this coming for years. Like I've planned it. I know where exactly. And various stages of my career, even before I got to radio, that was always how I saw things. I looked kind of 10 years in advance and thought, right, do I want to be that person doing that job when I'm that age and saying no, and then trying to work out how I get out of that. So when I was working in PR in the music industry, it was the same thing. And then when I got to Radio 1, it was the same thing. And then to a certain extent, you know, writing the book is a kind of way of giving me a post-broadcasting life, which involves much more writing, which I can do from wherever I want to in the world and not having to rely on being in a recording studio or radio studio like 4 days a week.
It's a bit like that with stand-up, really. It's like you can only, when you break through, you are who you are at that time. So, when I was like, when I first started doing stand-up, I was just like absolute idiot moron that was so overexcited to be doing stand-up and knew nothing about the world at all. And a lot of my jokes were about that. I'm going, this happened, finding out how to pronounce quinoa or quinoa, like all these things that at the time were true. But like, I've learned now. I'm 10, 15 years older, so I know more about the world, so I can't keep going out and going, bloody hell, guys, have you seen? And then everyone's just sat there going, we know you know now. You nearly 40, mate. If you don't know, you need help. You don't need another stand-up set. So it's like readjusting who you are for the audience.
Well, that's a massive problem for rappers. Like when rappers start off going on about the hood, and then suddenly you're Jay-Z, right? Like, what does Jay-Z know about the hood anymore, right? So to be fair to Jay-Z, he starts rapping about Basquiat paintings he owns and things like that.
Yeah.
But some rappers, there's a rapper called Pusha T, and he's still going on about, like, I think he runs Kanye West's label, and he's really rich, right? And he just keeps going on about being a drug dealer. You cannot keep going on about this stuff. It's kind of weird.
I want to talk to you about your book, Nihal, because it's called Let's Talk, How to Have Better Conversations. And what I want to get to is, right, you know what you're doing. You do your 5 Live show where all you do is talk to people all day. You can't hide behind songs. It's just constantly talking. And you can do small talk like waffle for a bit, but really that starts to wear thin. So you need to know how to get into proper conversations. And this book's all about that. But what I want to know is, can you talk to your teenagers? Because that's the problem all our listeners have. They go, oh, it's hard now physically with your little ones, but it gets worse. Okay. So can you talk to them? You said they're arguing at the moment. How do you talk to them? And how do you get them to talk to each other without ripping each other's heads off?
Well, the latter is proving to be very, very challenging indeed. The former actually is pretty chill. I mean, my son and I had a conversation the other day because, they're at that age now where you've got to really start thinking about what they're watching online, what they're sharing and, all of those kinds of things. Look, they don't necessarily want to sit there and have a conversation with you about pornography, right? It's a weird conversation to have with your dad, right?
What's your end goal? Is that basically don't watch too much porn, mate. It's not a good idea. Like, because you have to work out what you're trying to get to before you have the conversation.
Well, what you can't do is be naive enough to think that they're never going to see it, right?
Yeah.
So I was describing to him just a few days ago, in fact, hedge porn, right? Like finding porn mags in hedges in the 80s and the 90s, right? Like, that's where, and he was looking at me like, what are you talking about? And it's like, well, because it wasn't just available like it is now. But then also you have to talk to them about, and my understanding of it is you have to kind of say it's about the distortion of it. It's acting, right?
Yeah.
It's not something that you should, A, be sharing at all. Also as well, look, you have to have this conversation about not sending nudes or encouraging girls to send nudes to you. Don't do any of that. Respect also as well, respect and consent. Like, you have to just have the conversation, but also as well, it's just getting the tone right.
So did you just go into his room or whatever and sit down and go, here's something for you?
the click. So that's what, how do you get into that convo? Because I'm getting the vibe. I'm on board with the vibe.
Got the chair out, sat the wrong way round on it.
backwards cap.
So it was the classic way that all men communicate with each other, which is side by side, right? It's not face to face, right? So it's either, watching sport or, you know, in the pub, kind of watching. It was actually, we were driving along, the two of us, right? So that way you're not looking at each other in the face.
Yes.
You're just kind of having a conversation with each other. And you just bring it up, right?
But so you were already driving. This wasn't the porno chat drive. It wasn't just a journey for the porno chat. It was, we're driving anyway, just a couple of guys in the car. What's your first sentence? What's the first question? What's the first thing you say when you talk about your teenage son about wanking now?
Do you know what exactly?
What'd you say?
It's just about, I think I asked, so you ask about not him, but his mates, right? So you kind of make it about, so your guys like sharing pornography? Is it being shared widely on your phones, on Snapchat, for instance?
Yeah.
And then you just get into it like that. Look, the thing is, the more you prevaricate, the more you go, it just becomes more and more awkward. So you might as well just do it almost like you're going to have a conversation about the football, right? Like, so it just becomes, it's not a thing. Like, if you make it a massive thing, it will then become one.
I think it is a thing.
It's a massive thing, right? but you don't make it that, right?
Okay.
So for instance, the other day, he was talking about his pals vaping. Now, rather than me going, I hope you didn't do that.
Right.
I just went, oh, did you try that? Did you try it? Like, innocuously, right?
Yeah.
At which point he just turned around and went, like, I was an idiot. He went, why would I do that? It looks ridiculous when they're doing it, right?
Yeah.
Which made me just go, oh, right?
Yeah.
What you're trying not to do is promote a defensive attitude, right?
Yeah.
You're not trying to put anyone on the back foot.
But do you think he would have said yes if he had?
Do you know what? It's always difficult to not sound naive if you go, yes. everyone listening to Parenting Hill is going, yeah, sure, yeah. Nicole, yeah.
Sure, absolutely. He didn't have a cheeky little bum.
Sure, he hasn't, Nicole. Yeah, nice one.
Yeah. Well done, mate. Called Captain Best Parent. Well done.
I know, but I guess the point is that you can't beat yourself up about it, right?
What
you've got to know is that all of us three here as teenagers lied to our parents, right? So that's just part of being a teenager, right? That doesn't mean that they don't like you or they don't trust you, but it's just kind of important to have some secrets when you're a teenager, right?
Do
your thing. The key to it, I think, is not creating an environment where you're pushing them towards rebellion. By making rebellion actually just a part of growing up, it kind of takes the need for them to take it to the nth degree, I think.
It was when I was growing up, it was always a quite strict parent. It was either the really strict parents or the parents that didn't give a shit at all.
Yes.
So ones that were sort of, I'm going out tonight, see you later. And kids went off and did stuff because they were bored because their mum or dad was down the pub or whatever. Or the other ones going, you can't go out tonight.
Yes.
And it sort of made it a challenge. So I think finding somewhere in the middle.
You know, my wife and I are a totally different generation to our parents because we've experienced things and we've partied and we've done things that my parents just weren't from that generation, right? Like, I grew up in the rave generation. They weren't a Sri Lankan rave generation in the 1960s, right? Like, the Prodigy weren't playing in Colombo when they were teenagers. So we've got that kind of context to be able to say, look, there's going to come a point where drugs are going to be around you, right? Just make the right decisions. Come and talk to us about it, right?
Yeah.
What can you do, right? You can't really do anything. So I'm not about putting a microchip in the back of their neck or indeed chaperoning them everywhere they go, because that would be weird. I already look like an undercover police officer when I go to a rave, as it is. let alone accompanying my own children. Really.
Do you feel like you're a cool dad in that sense? Like, that must be quite an exciting thing for them, right? Or do you worry about being too down with the kids?
You know what? It's a weird one, though.
Sorry, whenever Josh asks these questions, I just can imagine him with his teenage son, like, trying to take him to a gig and not knowing what to do.
Yeah.
We went to see Example, the rapper, right, playing in Manchester, and the kids did come into the dressing room, right, and were with in the dressing room for about an hour and a half, just chatting to everyone in the dressing room, right? And it's not normal, right, for a 13 and a 14-year-old to kind of be in that environment and just hanging out. But they're just, it's fairly normal for them. So I think that what's interesting is there's a lot of Asian kids, certainly in my son's school, and their parents used to listen to me on the Asian Network. So their parents think I'm cool. So then the kids think I'm cool because their parents know who I am.
Yeah.
So there is, so we've had this conversation weirdly, and because I was like one of the other dads saying that his son wants nothing to do with him, right? Like, it's just like, go away, you're embarrassing. And actually my kids aren't like that. They want to spend time with us. And I was like, well, why is that? And he's like, well, because, you know, my mates don't think you're an idiot, right? Like, they think you're actually quite cool, like, because you've got to still collect trainers. And so it's interesting. Like, you could have a conversation with one of his mates about StockX and about Virgil Abloh Air Force One. So they're kind of looking at you like, because they can't with their own dad.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Right? But I think the key thing with that is that you do that anyway, because that's who you are, and you like your trainers, and you sort of get on with that quite quietly. You're not like pulling up at the school gates going, hey guys, check out my new dunks. That's the line. Because even though what you've got's cool 100%. And what they want,
100%.
It's just you've got to allow them to see it, as opposed to 100%. Be like, hey, 100%. I don't know if you're into this, but I am actually. I'm a pretty cool guy.
Yeah.
But there is a real love, especially when I'm hanging around with Romy. Like, young Asian families come up to him and the parents love him, the kids love him, and I think it's because they're seeing what, you know, they're being seen on screen, and he's talking about things he's going on in his life. But there is a real love for Romesh that's different to when anyone comes up to like me or Josh or someone like that, especially from Sri Lankan families. They're properly into it.
Well,
I think as well, because, you know, a lot of Sri Lankans were displaced because of the civil war, it's almost like, oh, you're here, how's it going? Because so much horrible stuff's happened. It's sort of not to see someone who's doing well that's like you is nice thing, you know.
Yeah, no, it's interesting. But also as well, because of the Asian Network show that I did for quite a few years, and it was a phone-in show, and it was a very controversial phone-in show, so it goes across Pakistani community, Indian community, Sri Lankan community, so that's it's quite a broad fan base for that show that I did over the years. So, yeah, and you're absolutely right about the not pulling up in the Supreme Air Force Ones and kind of going, yeah, look at these boys. Yeah, looking at, 'cause that's a bit noncy, isn't it? That's like that's the hipster equivalent of sweets, isn't it? Yeah. A bag of sweets, right?
The new age nonce.
Yeah.
it's much more expensive being a nonce these days, isn't it? You used to just be sweets, and now you've got to spend 100 quid on some trainers.
You see my foot team on FIFA. Have you seen who I've just unpacked? Just unpacked Messi, team of the week. So I don't know if you've got that. How old were your kids when you moved? You had to move from London to Manchester, didn't you? Did you all move as a family? How old were they?
Yeah, they. So that was 6 years ago. So they were 7 and 8 when that happened.
Was that a big decision?
Yeah. Did you feel guilty as well? Because it was like your decision, your job kind of thing.
It was horrific. I mean, we moved them to a new school where they were both bullied, and we had to take them out of the schools, which added layers of layers to the guilt. My wife was isolated and lonely, and the school mums at this new school were, apart from one I can remember, were pretty vile to her. So it was, and I was just going, off to my new exciting job, everyone.
You guys crack on.
You know, it's building resilience, guys. Resilience is important. Right?
This is all my fault. That's your brain must be like that. This is all my fault. Wife's unhappy, kids are unhappy.
All the time. Like, it was horrific. I remember not long after we'd moved up, we had to, for some reason, drive back to London, and we went to my brother's house in Purley. And we were driving back, and we had to drive close to where we lived, right?
Mm.
And my daughter, who was, like seven at the time, started screaming, "Take us home." As we, as she began to recognise the roads near where we used to live, she'd go, "Why do we have to go back? Take me home. I don't want to go. Take me home." And was crying and screaming in the back of the car. It was the most, like today, it burns viscerally in my subconscious and my conscious that it was the most horrific thing. And do you know what? And, you know, and then the bullying happened. And I mean, you know, I remember my son getting into the A team at the football team, which was at the expense of one of their boys, and he was the new kid. So they all rounded on him, and he came out as an 8-year-old and burst into tears because they'd been horrific to him.
Did you consider moving back?
Every day, but every single day, every single day. It was, you know, the North-South divide thing is really, really interesting. I think part of the reason they were bullied is because of how they sounded, because of their accents. It also didn't help that it was a largely non-Asian school where they'd been used to, in London, very mixed schools as primary school. Yeah. That didn't help. I remember going in and saying, "Why is this group of girls bullying my daughter, a girl of Chinese descent and a girl of Moroccan descent, and all the other girls are not of, they're all white English? Why is, do you think this is happening?" Yeah. And then the deputy head saying, "Oh, yeah, no, 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 it can't be what I think you're saying because one of the girls is Italian." And I was like, "Mate, are you joking? Like, are you joking? Are you serious? Did you just say that to me?" Right. So clear that there was a problem. And then it was also clear that the school wasn't willing to see that there was a problem.
Yeah.
Right. In the way that I was seeing it. And so we had to take them out, and we ended up putting them in two separate schools, an all boys school and all girls school. And the all girls school is really, has been kind of at one point challenging for her, but also she's managed to find a tribe there. And the all boys school has been the making of my son. Like, it's been the making of him. There's no question of it. So now they're really one of the main reasons we don't constantly talk about going back to London is because the schools are so good. The schools in Manchester are fantastic.
So, how long were they in that school for and then you moved them?
It was probably a couple of years.
Yeah. Well, you can't do it straight away, can you? Because
we had to move her from one primary school to another one. And then she stayed in that for a little while. And then we got him into the final year of the junior school, but the school goes all the way through to 18. So we got him into that, which is amazing and has been the making of him. But it's quite interesting. Brilliant. It's quite interesting. You know, they're still, they still talk absolutely like, this is going to be really bad, but they're Southerners still, right? 100%. And I remember once he came home, my son, and he said, "Oh, we've got to be at school dead early," which is a very northern thing, right? Yeah. Dead early. And
dead
I went, no, you don't. You either have to be there early or late. There's no dead in that sentence. Like I squashed it. Like, immediately I just went, no.
Yeah.
No, there's no dead early. So they still say grass and bath and all of those kinds of things. Yeah. There's none of that bath or grass or any of that kind of stuff.
Oh, that must have been such a relief for you that when they became more settled. I mean, obviously, I imagine that was a gradual thing, not an immediate, I love it now kind of. I've dropped my daughter off at school before where she's not wanting to go, and it's been really out of character because she loves it and she's really happy at the school. But even though I knew she loves it when she got in there and she just was a bit tired and was having a funny turn, I felt horrific. So I can't imagine how difficult it is for you or anyone listening that's got a child that's not really enjoying it at the school.
Well, my wife was picking up my daughter every day, and my daughter was bursting into tears every day. Jeez. She spent every lunchtime alone. Every break time alone.
Oh, my God.
And it was just a triumph of a day if she didn't come out crying, you know, and the trauma that places on children. Because the thing is, we kind of fool ourselves by going, kids are resilient, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But then what we do is we speak to adults, and I've interviewed plenty of adults who were bullied at school, and they remember every minute of it.
Yeah.
Right? They really do. And you think, oh, okay, they'll kind of cope and they'll get through it, and you know, it prepares you for life. But you know, the pop singer Anne Marie, she had a horrific time at school. And it affected her confidence all the way through. Like, even to this day, it affects her confidence. She's still kind of traumatized by what happened when she was bullied at school. So, you know, you just try and protect them as much as you can. I mean, my daughter, she plays the drums. She's doing kickboxing. She got this is mad. She got a role when she was 12. So beginning of this year, she got a part in an Apple TV drama, and they flew her out to LA to film for two weeks. So she's done an acting job.
Oh, that would give her loads of confidence, those kind of things.
It would, but she came back to school and obviously she just got loads of hate for it.
Oh, the jealousy of it.
Yeah, because that like every 12-year-old girl wants to get flown business class to LA to go and act in a drama, right, to be an actor, because they think suddenly you're a celebrity. So she actually ended up getting quite a lot of hate for it. And, you know, we were trying to say to her, look, and that's a really sad thing as well, just saying to her, like, look, just keep it low, like, don't talk about it, don't say anything. But she's 12 and she's like proud of herself, and so she should be. It's a huge achievement to audition for something and get the part.
Yeah.
And get, and so you're kind of having to deal with that, and you know that it doesn't get, the challenges of parenting teenagers are that they are beginning to be more emotionally sophisticated. So it's then you get into the worries about what the darker aspects of being a teenager can be. And you hear about self-harming, or you hear about, you know, issues around bulimia and things like that for both boys and girls. And you worry, you know, you kind of trying to give them confidence and love and support. And hopefully that will be enough to divert them away from the darker aspects of being a teenager. And, you know, look, I think we can all agree that being a teenager can be really horrific. Right?
It's awful. I hated it.
Yeah, right? You know, it wasn't all fun.
I blossomed and nailed it, actually.
Yeah, it's your adult life where it went all fucking wrong.
It all went wrong with it. Hey, mate.
It's going to be one or the other, Josh. It's going to be one or the other.
It was like AC Slater at school. Oh, dear. And then how did your wife settle in as well? Then that must have been hard for her, because if she lost her support network and then she's waiting for her daughter to come out from school upset every day, it's like, it must have been tough. And, you know, your show's on the afternoon, isn't it? Is that right?
Yeah, so it's like
every day,
one
your school pickup, you're working. So it fell on her every day to do it, really.
Absolutely. That's absolutely what happened. And, you know, I think she has finally found just a very few amount of people. It was just us struggling to find a social life. That was the thing.
It must be mad moving somewhere new. And then you've got this situation where you're just like, it's almost like when you see another parent, right? You're like, is this the one? Is this like speed?
Yes.
There's almost too much pressure on conversations with people, right? And I need friends.
Yes, that was the thing. And I kind of selfishly was, I've got my pals and kind of men, we need to see each other less. Like, we don't need to be there that constant companionship, as it were. But then also as well, you know, my wife devoted, she's only just really in the last year or so gone back to kind of part-time work. So she devoted well over a decade just to making sure that the kids were good.
Yeah.
But in that time, it was really hard. Look, because when you move and you're in your 40s, as I was, she was in her 30s, people have got their own social groups, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So they may like you, but they've still got friends that they've had for 25 years.
Yeah, I don't need any new friends.
Right.
I'm done.
Right. So look at you with your Drake lyrics, no new friends. You couldn't...
I'm quite keen on dropping a few out and refreshing them. I've got very much a revolving door policy. And
you're like Alex Ferguson. You don't want anyone to get comfortable.
Is it random?
It's sort of random, sort of about what suits the kids, who Lou's been talking to, who I can be bothered to text. Sometimes it's no one, so they're all right, I'll have a chat with them. But I think it's good, freshen it up. But it's hard, you know, you've like, because it, especially I think the main way you find friends is at work or with the school parents, if you are a parent.
Yes.
And I think with work, people have been working from home. Also, your job, you're sort of a lone wolf, really. You sort of have producers and stuff, but sometimes they're a lot younger and not doing the same things you are with teenage son and daughter. Yeah, yeah. So it's like you haven't got like a big team at work, and then if your wife's not working, and then you're not getting on with the school, and you're not going to start going for drinks with the parents of the kids that are being horrible to your kids. It does sum up quite a small area. You have to start like going paintball or something, just to find those start a new hobby.
I was incredibly proud of my wife, actually, when she did turn around to a school mum who was trying to kind of still make connection with us after we'd taken our daughter out of the school. And my wife, who was feeling particularly, I don't know, abrasive that day, maybe, just said to this woman, I remember it, she just said, look, the only reason we hung out was because our daughters were friends, and then your daughter was horrible to my daughter, so I see no reason for us to hang out anymore.
Love it.
She just said it to
yes,
her.
Yes, please.
Blatantly. Yeah. Blatantly, she said it to her. And the thing was, it was all a bit weird, the whole thing. And also, of course, you've got to be kind of mindful, why is it that someone wants to be your friend, right? Like, why? Yeah. Why does someone want to be your friend? And it's been hard, but my wife, Isha's found, I think, she's definitely found a couple of people up here that she really does rely on and that are really good.
That's
fun.
All you need, I think, a couple of good ones. You don't need a load of...
I'm terrified of them leaving home, I've got to say.
Are they still quite cuddly, or they get off me, Dad, now at 13 or 14?
My son couldn't be less cuddly. No, he's not. There's none of that cuddle. The only time we cuddle is when Tottenham score. That's the only time we cuddle is when Tottenham score a goal. That's the only cuddles I can get out of
I really wanted to go, oh, yeah, so you've not had many cuddles this year, but actually Tottenham are really good, so it doesn't work, unfortunately.
Do you tell him you love him in conversation? How does that go down? Does that make him go, oh, please don't? Or
I tell him I love him all the time. I tell them both I love him all the time.
Yeah. And oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, both.
He's very,
sorry, my daughter's coming. You look beautiful. Have you put makeup on?
Is she off
she
the town?
She's just come from Reading. Look, say hello.
Hello.
Say hello.
Hello.
Hello. Right, I'm going to do this and I'll see you in a minute, okay? You look beautiful. You look beautiful before, but you look beautiful now.
Good save, Rob.
You can give me something. You know, it's very. What you have to say is like, oh, you look so beautiful. We don't want to be like bigging them up too much because then they think they have to wear makeup all the time. Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. Look at it. Do you want to see what she's made me?
Yeah.
A bowl of flowers and water. Look at that.
That is stunning.
I'll take a photo and put it on Instagram. It looks, smells nice too. Thank you. Dog's in here now as well. Okay, do you want to see the dog?
Okay,
just doing
a bit of work. Okay, that
that's right, a whippet.
Oh, wow, that is a... Wow.
Can I take a photo of that, Michael? You can.
That is such a hipster dog. Look at that hipster dog.
I know, but he's caught up in the wire.
do you get...
Right, take the dog, please. Jesus Christ.
That's your photo.
It was an accidental hipster dog because it was just one that was going and they're good with kids. Now I look like one of them...
Do you get free? Do you get free matcha lattes for life?
Oh, God, I don't really take him to the cafe. He's a bit too lively still. Okay, sorry, I interrupted everyone. I'll take a photo. That's what you made me.
Oh, yeah, so you tell your son and daughter you love them all the time.
Oh, all the time. And my son, it depends. They won't say, I love you too, if they're around their friends. But they will say, I love you too, definitely, if they're in the house and all that. And I'm forever just... hugging them and kissing them and like all the kind of opposites of really how my dad was, right? Not that I didn't know he loved me. I knew he did, but he would have never said it. Yeah. He would never been tacked up. Yeah, he would never have said it. No.
My dad's 78, so he's a bit more... What's happening? Okay, I've got another thing. Oh, Nihal's talking about his dad not telling him he loved him. Hang on. So my daughter's coming with another bowl of flowers. Oh, that's amazing. Thank you. That's so nice. Do you want to quickly wave as well? Come on, say sorry about this.
That's all right.
Say hello.
Hello.
Okay, it's another one. Another bowl of water by my computer.
This is so beautiful and so creative.
Thank you.
I love it.
It's amazing. See you in a minute. Love you. All right, okay, love you. Bye. Lou just told me she was crying because my other daughter came in and she didn't. Just got two bowls of water now with flowers in by my computer. That's quite dangerous.
On your reserve computer because your other one broke as well.
You weren't tempted to say to your older daughter, well, you snooze, you lose. Like, the
younger
one came in first. Yeah, right, came in first, showed that she loves me more than you do. Yeah. So you're going to have to work for this, right?
Yeah.
So why don't you go out there and work out what is more impressive than a bowl of water with flowers and come back and see me then. You're not building resilience, Rob Beckett.
I just got one of them little bowls of flower heads, actually. Yeah. From a daughter that had makeup on. Why don't you put a bit of an effort? Bowl in an ear, au naturel. Get a bit of slap on.
Wow. Rob,
I'm doing it all wrong.
You're doing it all wrong. You're being nice to them.
So would your dad wouldn't say he loved you as such, but would he hug, no hugs and stuff like that? A bit more old school.
None of that stuff.
It's mad. I've got friends like that. And, you know, but my dad's 78 and proper love you, cuddle, kiss you. And I used to hate it and all stuff like that. But
amazing.
I think it was quite good for his time, really, considering how old he is. It's lovely that it was that emotional.
My son is now taller than me, so it's also a kind of weird.
How tall is he?
Thingy. He's 5'11".
5'3".
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
That's what Neil does, right? Exactly. Neil's not his name. It's just a nickname. Knee high. That's how tall he is.
That's exactly what it is.
So how tall is he? He's quite tall now.
Yeah, he's 5'11", I'm 5'10", so he's and he's 14, so I think, you know, he's
got a couple more inches in him, I reckon.
Yeah. So he's
Can he take you yet in a fight, or do you reckon you've still got the...
So there's a lot of that. There's that Oedipus thing is beginning, right, where they're kind of challenging you. So the one we do is the scrum. So, like, lock in, pushing each other. And the other day, I think, for the first time ever, he pushed me back. Whereas I've been pushing him back consistently for the last few years. So he's definitely getting that on. And he's now kind of, he plays football and cricket. So he's just trying to get a little bit more bulked up. He played yesterday and he was very, very physical, which is kind of part of what his game had lacked before. And he's got a lot of skill on the ball, but he just sometimes kind of duck out of a 50-50, whereas he went in hard, they say. So he's definitely getting a bit more lively. So yeah, that'll happen. That'll definitely.
You really lit up then. Do you like what? You must love watching him play sport. Do you love your kids,
mate?
Your eyes completely lit up with in awe of it.
It's the greatest thing ever. Is watching your kids.
Do you shout from the sideline?
But I've not in that kind of like. What are you doing, you mug? Like that, like some dads, like some dads. So call that a tackle, you pussy. I'm definitely not doing that. And I'm just trying to be encouraging, but also watching cricket. So watching your son bat is the most horrific experience, because that walk out to the crease, firstly, is so lonely. Right?
Yeah.
And then if you're out for a duck, it's not like any other sport. If you're out on your first ball, a golden duck, right? That's it, right? Mm. There's no second chance. Like, you can be a striker and you can miss. You can miss two or three times and still score a goal, still be the hero, right? But with cricket, as soon as you're out, that's it. And you walk back. And I remember two or three years ago, he got three or four ducks in a row, right? No. Right. And on the third or fourth one...
It's weird, because that's quite a good thing if you're doing your to-do list, isn't it? Yeah, getting your ducks in a row. But in cricket, nightmare.
Cricket is...
Nightmare fuel.
It's an absolute nightmare. And he burst into tears, said he's not doing it anymore.
Oh.
And then the coach walked him round the entire boundary and Obi-Wan Kenobi'd him and really brought him back on board again. And then he went. And then he had to go back out and bat because one of their players got injured. And he scored loads of runs. So he went back out again. And the psychology of that is extraordinary, and you're totally living vicariously through your kids when you watch them play sport.
I bet.
Like, totally.
Well, self-confidence and self-belief is so much more important than any ability or talent or luck. Like, if, as long as you can continue to back yourself, your ability will come through. But that's good that he's got a coach that did that. And how about your daughter? Does she do much sport? Is she more into acting?
She's doing Muay Thai kickboxing, so that's really good. But at the moment, she hasn't competed at all. But
that'd be tough. Watching her get that hit.
But it's so brutal. I mean, because with Muay Thai, you're using elbows, you're using it's proper full-on contact. But also watching her drum is amazing. Like, when you're watching your daughter behind a drum kit and like properly drumming, right, not just going boom,
because that would be a lot of parents' nightmare to have a drum kit in the house with a child playing it.
It's amazing, because I love drummers. I've always loved drum, like being an old school hip-hop head. Hip-hop is all about the percussive spine of a track, so listening to her drum is again one of my greatest pleasures, just actually watching her at a drum kit. Because also, as well, how rare is it to see a little Asian girl drumming? Right?
Yeah.
Like, it's just not one of those things you see, right? Like, it's Led Zeppelin.
I'm going to say something here. Never seen one. Never seen an Asian girl drum. Maybe that's my problem. I never have. I'm not against it. Don't get me wrong. I'm up for it, but I've never seen it.
Trust me, Rob. Asian communities aren't getting together going, let's keep this from the white people for as long as we can, and having loads of Asian girls drumming, right? This is, we don't have secret societies where this is going on all the time, right? It's just not happening, right? So the fact that she's chosen those two things actually points to what an interesting young lady she is. She's just and why she finds it quite difficult to fit in with the idea of being a girly girl.
Yeah,
she's
of course.
She's just not that kid, right? And that's amazing. And that's something I'm incredibly proud of her is that she's just doing her own thing. And she, you know, she was sit there and build Lego for 5 hours and then, you know, and drum. And she's massively interested in how things work and how things are connected. It's just brilliant.
We've said this before on the show, and I don't want to repeat myself, but I think it's worth repeating in this instance about kids and at school not fitting in and things like that. It was when Catherine Ryan's mum's advice, where Catherine was having trouble at school and she said, I just want to be normal like the other girls. And her advice was, they're not normal, they're ordinary. There's a difference.
Yes, that's really good advice.
Yeah, and I think that's what's sort of happened in a way, hasn't it? If she's into Mai Tai and drumming, it's just not the norm.
It's not the norm, and also as
which
well,
good
the,
thing.
The modern way of describing ordinary is basic. That's the word they use, right? Yeah. They're basic, right? And you don't want to be basic, right? And this doesn't work out for you, and this won't feel great now, but trust me, when you're older, this is a superpower, right?
Like,
being different is an absolute superpower. Like seeing the world in a different way, being curious about it, you know, doing the things that other people don't do makes you just kind of incredible, really, you know.
It's difficult for me to understand that as like one of those normal and popular teenagers that I was.
So
difficult for me to
when Josh was just like just pulling girls and drinking cider and all the other norms.
Yeah. But it does kind of work with you being a sociopathic, unpopular adult, it's always going to be one stage, isn't it, Josh? It's going to flip at some point. It's going to flip at some point.
But you know what, Nihal? I think considering, like, you know, that was a really tough 6 years if you had to move your whole family for your work and then your kids weren't getting on well at school. But it sounds like all of you are blossoming now, which makes me want to read your book even more. Let's Talk How to Have Better Conversations, because I think the reality is life can be really hard and really tough, and we find it all quite overwhelming. But I think the truth of it is we are way better at dealing at it than we give credit to. And it isn't that life needs to get easier, it's just we need to trust that we're strong enough to deal with it. And I think the way you unpack things and the way you work through things is really inspiring and really impressive. And there'll be a lot of people that are about to move, that their kids aren't getting on, and I think it's really good talking about it because it shows that you can work through things, and it really helps. And I think the book, and I love the cover, by the way, with a parrot on the front, it's absolutely brilliant. So I think I imagine there's lots of stuff like that in the book.
We've got to ask as well, how would you rank this conversation? What kind of quality of conversation have we offered in the last hour?
Well, what's really good about comedians, especially comedians that are used to interacting with crowds, is that you are listeners, right? Like, you have to be listeners, right?
Yeah.
The only thing is, and this hasn't been the case in this conversation, is my daughter said this to me. She said, because they talked about this at school, and it was this phrase, are you listening to understand or are you listening to talk?
Right,
and
the worst
kind of conversations are people that are purely listening to talk. They're
guilty.
Not listening to understand.
I'm getting better, though. I'm trying.
But that's why this format is so much different than you having to be on a game show or a panel show. It's where you are. Of course, all you're doing is listening to talk because you're there to entertain. The problem is when that translates into everyday life, right? And because you two are very famous people, people are often only wanting to hear what you've got to say, right?
Yeah.
So they're always asking you about yourselves. And the problem with that, of course, is that can have an effect on your own curiosity levels because you're always having to talk about yourself.
You know what? It leads to a third type of listening, which is what I do if I get in a situation where I think someone's going to ask me about myself, which is listening to avoid talking about myself.
Right.
Going on a preemptive strike, if say I got in a cab and he recognised me, I'd rather than go down the conversation of what's Jimmy Carr like, I'd straight away try and ask him about
Uber
driving
and immigrants.
A cab, football, Brexit and why it worked, stuff like that.
Yeah, it's going well, isn't it? And then let them run, let them rip.
What a lovely country Rwanda is.
Yeah,
and why more people should go there.
Oh, well, mind it. It gets cold here, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, that's an interesting deflection. So deflection.
which I know is a bad habit, but I can't talk about Jimmy Carr again.
Well, Your book, well, it's out. It came out on the 18th of August. You can get it sort of online and in shops, can't you? So that is Let's Talk How to Have Better Conversations.
And, you know, the book, it goes from, you know, a police crisis negotiator, John Sutherland, talking about hostage negotiation and the listening involved in that, to someone who spent a year with neo-Nazis making an Emmy Award-winning documentary, her as a Muslim woman doing that, to Lorraine Kelly. I mean, it's a fairly diverse set of guests that I've got for the book. You know?
Did you? So how was it sitting down with them? I suppose, is it easier with a book than this? I mean, I know this sounds bad. When you do your Five Live show, you give a really good chunk of time to people. So, like, you'll come on your Five Live show and it'll be 45 minutes or something. Are you ever 5 minutes into a 45 minutes and you think, oh, Jesus. Oh, God, this is going slow. How am I going to get this conversation
to go forward? And we want names.
Do you know what? The worst conversation, if you want to check it out, it's on Headliners, the podcast that I do, the BBC, is Mark Maron, the comedian. Without question, the worst interview I've ever done.
Yeah. You got a name, great.
Yeah. Like,
what went wrong?
Do you know what? It was just that we totally didn't get each other. And what he wanted was an opportunity, I think, to tell his gags. Right. And what I would do was I would describe a scenario that was in his book. And what I wanted was the journey that got to that scenario, whereas he kept thinking that I was giving away the punchlines to the jokes that he wanted to tell, right? But the thing was, and maybe he wasn't briefed very well for people, is that this isn't Graham Norton when you come on my show, which is all about just tell us the anecdotes, right? And then go, right? This is actually, we're trying to find out who you are and how you became. And I used the word sociopath, I remember, to describe who he was when he was younger, because there was loads of things in the book about how kind of horrific he was to people. And there was a lot of drugs and there was a lot of that going on. And I remember him saying things like, people like you use that word sociopath without knowing what it means, without knowing what it was. And then I remember afterwards, we came out of the studio. And he kind of tried to be a bit chummy.
It was face to face as well.
Yeah, face to face. Yeah, right. And then he came out trying to be quite chummy. And I told him to fuck off. Right. I went, are you joking? Like the way you just carried on. Like he just was horrible. And the thing was, in your circles, Mark Maron is well known, right?
Yeah.
And in America, he's quite well known. But in the UK, he's not really that well known, right? He's quite cultish, right? Yeah. So my audience were like, who is this horrible guy, like being horrible to you, right? Like the vast majority of texts were like, get him off. Yeah. And then I was told later on that night that he was performing at the Lowry and he actually called me out to know if I was there.
No.
Like he was like, yeah, he's like, is the guy, I think he may have said my name, he may not have, the guy from Radio 5, is he here in the audience? Weirdly enough, I had been invited to go before the interview. After the interview, I obviously said to the PRs, are you joking? What, spend a night with him rather than go and see my family? So, and then apparently, this is what I was told by people who are in the audience, that he then went on one about how I'd ruined his day. Like, it was so weird.
Oh,
like,
wow.
The whole experience with him. You can actually listen to the podcast. It's Headliners, BBC Sounds, Mark Maron. And I've never listened to it back again.
I cannot wait.
I can tell you now, it's going to be astonishing that this podcast is going to be, this one we're doing now is going to be number two in the charts to that. People are going to go and listen to this.
I've never listened to it since because it was so kind of awkward and it was so weird because, look, ultimately, and you both know this because you've been on my show to do it, is that you guys are coming on to sell something, right?
Yeah, and it's a bit of a deep dive.
Yeah, and I'm providing a platform for us to have a proper conversation about not just the thing that you're selling, but kind of who you are and how you get to do the things that you do and why you do the things that you do. So there's a quid pro quo there, right? Like, you know, you're not necessarily doing me a massive favor, right? Because my audience is not turning up to hear Mark Maron. They're like, they're not going, we've been waiting for this moment for 6 years.
Yeah, if you're on that, you go to his podcast, you know, they're there for you and whoever you're talking to.
Yeah, exactly, right? You're listening to my show on Five Live, not because of a specific person, but you know there's going to be someone interesting and we're going to have an interesting conversation, right? That's the point. So when he was like really kind of weird and defensive and And, you know, look, people will have to listen to it and they'll make up their own choice whether I got it completely wrong or not, right? That just is what it is. But in my defence, I would say I'm doing this 12 hours a week. And if he's the only dude, right,
yeah,
that I can remember...
in 6 years.
Yeah, then maybe it wasn't me. Like, I was just doing what I do, right? So
is that it? Right, I can't wait to listen to that.
Yeah, no, just... And I've interviewed people who are regarded to be quite... who don't like being interviewed, right? And had really good interviews with them. Damon Albarn, Tom York, those kinds of people, right? And we've had great conversations. So for Mark Maron to be that guy...
Yeah. So what is one thing that we do this about? What is one thing that your partner does, your wife does, parenting-wise, that annoys you, that you haven't really told her? Maybe you have now. You've been together a little while. That if she heard on air, she'd go, yeah, fair enough. And also, what is one thing she does parenting-wise that's brilliant and a real positive that you don't tell her she does brilliantly enough? So we can weigh it then, rather than it just being a negative.
Yes, of course. So... the thing that we argue about the most...
OK, you're going to go for the negative first. Fair enough.
Yes,
that's
we're
fine.
Going to go for the negative first. Let's get that out of the way, because I want to finish on a positive.
Yeah. That came straight to mind, actually, yeah.
Well, because it's ongoing. It's like a daily thing. It's that I think she's way too strict and she thinks I'm way too slack.
That's an immovable problem in sense of the discussion.
It's really difficult. That is one that we are... trying to work out every single day. And it's a challenge. The positive thing is she's an unbelievable mother. I mean, she's a lioness. She will fight for them and defend them. And she organizes everything to within an inch of its life. She's so on it. She's unbelievable. You know, she's just the most brilliant organizer, but also super supportive of them. And, yeah, and she's, you know, it would all fall apart without her. I mean, it would genuinely all fall apart. You know, we'd be on Uber Eats every night, yeah, right? Like if it was left to that. But also once they become teenagers, you'll find this. And once they're doing clubs and they're doing sports, the logistics involved to make sure that they're getting to training or they're getting to the match on time is, you know, it's a huge amount of work. And she's just brilliant at it. She's absolutely brilliant. And she's so kind of fierce about them. She's fierce at everything that she does. And that's amazing.
It's nice finishing on positive, isn't it, Josh?
Yeah. Takes us 2.5 years to realise that.
We're all a work in progress.
Every day is a school day, isn't it?
Thank you so much. It was brilliant.
That was one of my favourites we've ever done. I love
it. It was really good. Oh, cheers, mate. Thanks.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Big love. Big love.
Ni hao, Arthur Nayaka. Great one. I enjoyed that. I didn't know what it was going to be like, because I've met him before. Great guy, really funny and stuff. But with people where they're like, you know, he's a broadcaster, he can get really serious. But I think that was a perfect balance.
Perfect balance. That was exactly that is exactly what I want this podcast to be to future guests.
Really funny stuff, but also some really interesting stuff. And he was opening up about moving and stuff. And I thought it was great, because there must be so many people listening where the kids aren't happy at school. And I'm so lucky that my girls enjoy it. But it must be so hard if they don't, waiting to pick them up every day. So it's nice to know that it gets better.
Yes. Thank you for listening. Thank you, Nihal. Let's Talk How to Have Better Conversations is out now. Also, if you want it, let's just Google it. Headliners...
Oh, your headliner's Mark Maron, BBC
Mark
Sounds.
Mark Maron.
You'll
BBC
find it. I think
Sounds.
It's got a bit of a cult following as an awkward interview anyway, like outside of Nihal and Mark Maron in that sort of, you know, online world.
Oh, well, there we go. I look forward to that. It's from 2019. And
pre-pandemic.
Oh, to be in the room with someone that hates you like that, it's bad enough on Zoom, isn't it, when it goes badly?
We get by. right, I'll see you. I'll speak to you on Tuesday, Josh.
See you on Tuesday. You go and sort your kids out, Rob. I can see you looking over your shoulder.
Yeah, bye.